Consumers are shopping early for deals this holiday season. That's why you need to take advantage of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack. Everyone loves the Thunderstorm. It doesn't take up any floor space, there are no filters to replace, and it's only one-third the cost of those big, bulky air purifiers. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and put in code Howie3 at checkout.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, The Spectator, and The Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining us today. And we do have a winner on the text line, so you don't have to keep texting in. And some people were throwing out different ones. BU, you know, that's AOC's alma mater. And we're going to get to AOC in a little bit. I gave Howie the update yesterday at the beginning of my news for his show. And since then, there's been speculation about what this House Ethics Committee is all about, but we're not sure yet. A lot of people think it has to do with her Met Gala attendance, where she wore that beautiful tax the rich dress. And so we'll talk about that in a little bit. I just wanted to mention, though, that Fox News has a chyron up about Biden explaining to people that Russia's treating the Weyland case differently. And we had talked about how it's hard not to notice, it's hard not to be incensed by the fact that Brittany Griner was given special treatment. And, you know, I'm happy that she's released from prison. I'm happy she's coming back to the United States. But there's another American citizen, an ex-Marine, a former Marine, who's still there, whose family is, you know, begging Joe Biden to even care. And he seems very dismissive of the whole thing. And there's a particular line here that I want to play for you. And we're not going to spend the whole hour on this by any means, but take a listen to Joe Biden talking about Paul Whelan. This is cut four.
We never forgot about Brittany. We've not forgotten about Paul Whelan, who's been unjustly detained in Russia for years. This was not a choice of which American to bring home. We brought home Trevor Reed when we had a chance early this year. Sadly, for totally illegitimate reasons, Russia is treating Paul's case differently than Brittany's. And while we have not yet succeeded in securing Paul's release, we are not giving up. We will never give up. We remain in close touch with Paul's family, the Whelan family.
I don't know if I believe that they're never going to give up, but it's nice of him to say, I guess. As far as they're treating this differently, when he talks about these negotiations and when KJP talks about them as well, does anyone else get this sense when he says, oh, Russia's treating, and then he puts on his, you know, his angry voice, for very unjust, unfair reasons, they're treating this differently? Because again, he has to show you, I'm angry, man. You know, he almost gets as angry as the people using the Wi-Fi in the McDonald's parking lots. But I can't help but feel like when we hear about these negotiations between Russia and the U.S. and how they're handling Paul's case differently than Brittany Griner's, I'm getting the sense that the U.S. is not in the driver's seat in these negotiations. Is anyone else? Like, when I hear negotiations, the vibe I'm getting is they're telling us what they're going to give us and we're saying, okay. A negotiation implies that there's a little back and forth. You get this, I get that. I don't like that. Maybe we'll do this. You know, the art of the deal type of situation. When I think of a negotiation with Joe Biden, I'm really starting to feel like it's these leaders telling him this is what you'll take and this is, and you'll say thank you for it. And he goes along with it. I would go as far to say is not only are we not in the driver's seat, we're not even backseat drivers in these scenarios. We're like Mitt Romney's Irish setter, Seamus. We're riding on the roof. You know, we're just looking down at this going, okay, that sounds good. Sounds good to me. Thanks so much. Does anyone think that Joe Biden's calling the shots, even 50-50? Go ahead, Jared. You wanted to throw something
in. Well, I was going to say, even more than that, you know, we took a little bit of KJP's press conference when they were talking about the Saudis' involvement. And she said, oh, well, they gave us, you know, the territory to make the prisoner exchange. The Saudis are saying they brokered the deal. And so that's even weaker for Biden if the Saudis did, in fact, broker the deal. But even worse is now they're They're, if the Saudis did this, they're stabbing the Saudis in the back again, saying, no, they didn't do it. We did it. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's a giant clown car.
Yeah.
And people like Paul Whelan and even people like Brittany Griner are caught in the crossfire. And everybody that's a potential future victim of the Merchant of Death got caught in the crossfire of this clown car.
You know, if you could have asked Brittany Griner when she was in that jail cell for almost a full year in Russia, in a Russian prison, if you got her alone and she didn't think that you were media, she really was being honest, and you said, if you could go back, would you rather have Donald Trump be president right now? There's not, to me, I don't think there's even a question she would say yes.
And well, you know, and again, not Brittany Griner's fault at all that Joe Biden made this terrible deal. Nothing to do with her. This is all on Joe Biden. But that's where a lot of people kind of have a distaste for Brittany Griner because of her, you know, what they call the anti-American agenda, speaking out, dislike for the country.
Assume that's going to change, right? I would assume that you land back here, you start kissing the ground that, right, that you land on when you come back to America. I feel that way when I go on a vacation, a nice vacation. If I was in a Russian prison for almost a year, I think you come back here as a pretty patriotic American. I would have to imagine there is never going to be a time where life hits you in the face and wakes you up as to, hey, it's not that bad here. It's actually pretty flipping great. There'd never be a more obvious example of that than what just happened to her. I cannot fathom that she would come back and be anti-American. I really can't.
Yeah, I mean, you would certainly hope not. And it's just, from that standpoint, it's just too bad it takes an event like this for people to realize how good we actually have it in this country.
Yeah.
On a personal level.
Okay, another thing I wanted to talk about as far as different treatment and how you can notice it if you pay close attention. We discussed recently Maxine Waters, and I made a comment that when Maxine wants to be, when she's talking about Trump administration officials, when she's talking about Republican voters,
dossier,
she can be really, really nasty. She can be really mean, really aggressive. And yet, when she tweeted at Sam Bankman-Fried the other day, asking him if he would appear before one of the committees, because she is the House Financial Services Committee chair, and she wanted him to appear at a hearing that I think is coming up. I think it was December 13th is when it's coming up. She wrote him the most loving, sweet, gentle,
sex actioned,
delicate tweet that I'd ever seen. And I don't follow Maxine Waters on Twitter, believe it or not. But I don't think she normally talks to people with this much sweetness. This was her tweet. She said, "We would welcome your participation in our hearing on the 13th. Now, SBF declined the invite. He said that once he's finished learning and reviewing what happened, I would feel like it was my duty to appear before the committee and explain. I know I use this expression a lot. Maybe it's getting old, but it is giving the vibe of OJ trying to find the real murderer. Like, once I figure out what happened, you know what happened, bro. You're what happened. You are what happened. You are what the investigation needs to center around." But he basically declined her invite. He said, "Thanks, but no thanks.
I can't accept your invite. It would endanger sources and methods."
Yeah, well, now she has no plans to subpoena Sam Bankman-Fried. So it's okay that
he'll teach you to play hard to get, SBF.
It's okay that you don't want to show up. I was talking today about this with Howie, and I said, because I hadn't thought about it. I think it had crossed my mind, but I hadn't verbalized it on the show, and I heard Howie mentioning it on his show. SBF's doing all these interviews, right? And they're weird. He's doing interviews with George Stephanopoulos. He's doing interviews with, like, the New York Times podcast. I don't even know. He was supposed to speak at the New York Times panel event with Janet Yellen and Mark Zuckerberg and Time Person of the Year, Zelensky. And of course, you know, something came up. He got a little tied up, so he couldn't make it. But he's giving all these interviews where he's saying, you know, it is what it is. I could really give you I'll give you a summation of the interviews. I'm not Bernie Madoff because I had a legitimate business. It is what it is. I got overwhelmed. It's been a humbling experience, and I'm truly sorry. And he thinks, and maybe he's right, that that's going to be enough to get him off the hook for billions of dollars disappearing. And you know what? We live in such a screwed up world that maybe it will be enough. But he's doing all these interviews and he's kind of weaving different tales, you know? And Howie mentioned this. He said, doesn't he have a lawyer who might be saying to him, like, hey, we're going to ease up on the interviews? Isn't that the first thing you tell a client, especially a client who seems to be in deep, deep excrement? Don't you say, hey, maybe tell George Steppy Stephanopoulos to give it a rest. We'll come back to him later once we have a... Now, I'm not saying you never do interviews. Lord knows, from Fauci to all these people, they all want to be on camera. All these liberal, altruistic, wonderful people. But in the case of Sam Bankman-Fried, don't you at least get your game plan together? And by game plan, I mean your lies. Don't you at least get your lies straight and say, here's the story we're going to tell. Go over with your lawyer a few times, and then you go to an interview. And when you're in the interview, you're on guard. You are careful. I don't get the vibe from this tousle-haired, golden doodle owner, game station player, whatever, Bahamas owner, whatever he is, that he's being careful. I get the sense that he's just going off the cuff. He's just, you know, he thinks like he's in a therapy session with Stephen Colbert. You're in a lot of trouble, dude. Someone should tell him this.
I'd be surprised if he even has a lawyer. Probably paid his lawyer in FTX.
No. I think he's got the same, you can look it up. I think he's got the same lawyer as Ghislaine Maxwell.
Okay.
I just read that the other day.
Okay.
I'm not joking,
it is a
Jared.
Small world. Wow.
You can fact check me on it, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. It reminds me, you know what it reminds me of a little bit? And obviously two totally different scenarios, but just in the sense of putting a lot out there on the table, it reminds me of Andrew Cuomo. Remember Andrew Cuomo when he started getting into all this trouble? He kept going in front of reporters and thinking he could talk his way out of it. He'd be like, oh, okay, you're next. Listen up here. Okay, ciao, Bella. This is what I told her. Listen, hey, I've always been hugging and kissing people. It's what I do. And I kept thinking to myself, he's given people a blueprint to get him in trouble down the line. And I'm not a lawyer. Did you guys know that? I'm not a lawyer. So I hope you haven't been taking any of my legal advice. But if I were a lawyer, I think one of my top tips for these clients would be shut up. Isn't that like the number one thing you say? Just stop talking. If I was SBF's lawyer, I would be calling him up around the clock being, please stop. Please stop messaging people on Twitter. Please stop doing interviews. Please just shut it down. 844-500-4242. Seems pretty basic to me. Why do real estate owners voluntarily choose to auction their own homes, commercial property, and land? Well, the answer is simple. Certainty. In a J.J. Manning real estate auction, the seller benefits from certainty of a sale date, certainty of no contingencies, certainty of a closing in 30 days, and certainty of competition fighting for your property. In a J.J. Manning auction, you are in the hands of a 46-year seasoned firm with over 16,000 auctions under their belt. You can't beat that. Your property is their important project. You know, if something's very important to you, like selling your property, you want to put it in the hands of someone who values it and thinks it's just as important as you do. There's no distress. You set the terms and you sell contingency-free, which is huge. And the buyer pays the commission. We've had so many listeners go to J.J. Manning. They really have had a great experience. And once you meet Charlie Gill, Justin Manning, you'll understand why these guys are the best in the business. In an uncertain real estate market, choose certainty. Choose J.J. Manning. Remove the doubt. From Needham to Nashua, Westford to Westwood, and Yarmouth to Merrimack, my listeners and Howie's have chosen certainty and sold with J.J. Manning. To learn more, so you've heard me talk about it, you're going, okay, well, you know, I want to get my residential or maybe commercial or land property sold, but how do I contact them? You want to reach out to Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or visit jjmanning.com. Don't wait for prices to head even lower. Call Charlie today at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com and get your real estate sold. We'll be right back with your calls. It's The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Answering the hard-hitting questions of our time.
Let's say you're abducted by aliens.
Fine.
They haul you aboard the mothership, take you back to their planet as a curiosity. Now, would you rather be in their zoo or their circus?
It's the Grace Curley Show.
I've got a special treat for the audience at 2:30. This was a kind of a last-minute guest who's going to call in. And I'm not even going to tell you what it is because you're going to prejudge. You're going to say, no, I don't want to hear it. Give it a chance. Stay tuned for 2:30. I think you might end up liking this. Today's poll question is brought to you by Omaha Steaks. The holidays are here, and the steak experts at Omaha Steaks have put together special curated gift packages to help take the guesswork out of gifting and make you a holiday hero. Who doesn't want to be a holiday hero? You'll feel like Santa Claus. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use code GRACE at checkout to get $40 off your order. Minimum order may be required. Jared, what's the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Which Biden international blunder is the most embarrassing? The Merchant of Death prisoner swap, begging the Saudis for oil, or the Afghanistan withdrawal?
And there's so many more. We're only scraping the surface. I'm going to go Afghanistan withdrawal.
73% say the Afghanistan withdrawal, 19% for begging the Saudis for oil, and 8% for the Merchant of Death prisoner swap.
Should I put withdrawal on the board? That's one that I'm hearing myself the more I say it, and I'm going, is this a problem for me? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that one's
remains
that one's okay.
To be seen. We'll put it to a vote. Pete, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, this situation with Sam Bankman-Fried, I'm just kind of wondering here. I'm wondering how the people in power, a few of the politicians, even Maxine Waters, I think, is involved in it deeply. How are these people going to rectify this situation? Obviously, they're going to try to do the cover up, but now that it's all been exposed, brought to light, is the government going to bail them out like they did it under Obama's regime? With Wall Street?
I don't know, Pete. And, you know, some of these lawmakers, some of these politicians have been giving their money back, but there's no question that this guy donated a lot of money to Democrats, and Democrats are in control right now. They've got the president, they've got the Senate, and I don't know how hard they're going to go at SBF. I don't know how much they're going to want to find out. But it's almost bigger than that. Like, they almost don't have an option because so many people lost so much money that I don't think they could ignore this one. Jerry, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Jerry.
Good afternoon. Just quickly, with the Brittany Griner situation, I don't understand the sympathy. And I don't understand it because she has admitted to willfully and with intent tried to bring into a foreign country illegal substances. There's no question about this. There's not a question that she's innocent or guilty. We know she's guilty, right? And I know she did 11 months, what was probably hard and tough time, but she just made herself millions, plural, millions.
Wait, but no, Jerry, hold on. Let me stop you there. So you just said, you know, she probably did 11 months hard time. Do you not think that she should have been let out?
I mean, I don't think the punishment fit the crime.
So then we agree. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that this was a good deal by Joe Biden. I'm not saying it was a good trade, a good swap. I'm not saying that it's fair that Paul Whelan seems to be getting the short end of the stick. I'm not saying any of that, and I hope that's getting across. All I'm saying is when you look at the case of Brittany Griner, yes, she broke the law in Russia, but the way you just put it is the perfect way to describe it. The punishment didn't fit the crime, and I think anyone who's, you know, using common sense would agree. I think people are happy that she's able to return for the most part. I think that the White House did not expect at all. They get caught like very flat-footed. They did not expect that people would remember that Paul Whelan is still in a Russian prison. They did not expect
good,
that kind of blowback.
70% chance they didn't even know Paul Whelan was in a prison with this administration.
They started this, you know, beating the drums. Like, this was going to be such a great thing. And then I think they got this pushback, and now they're already kind of, okay, moving on to the economy, moving on to other things. But I think if they hadn't received a little pushback from reporters saying, hey, what about Paul Whelan? They would have milked this for the next 2 years. But now I don't think they will as much because they don't want to address the fact that it's not just Paul Whelan. There's two other American citizens who are still in Russian prisons. So once again, I think they miscalculated and they didn't understand the full ramifications of coming out and bragging about this great victory. 844-500-4242. Unfortunately, I can't take any more calls. We do have a guest coming up in the next segment. We're going to have a little fun, okay? Sometimes the audience is a little resistant to this. It's okay. We're just going to take a quick break from the politics. We're going to have a little bit of fun with our next guest. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
I wish a lot of luck to Harry, because he's going to need it.
The famously insane European monarchies of the 19th and 20th centuries.
Hello, cheeky. You is much fitter than you look in them coins.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm so excited. We haven't done an official royal segment in so long. And we are very lucky today because Cara Kennedy, who is a writer for The Spectator World, she comes from Wales and she resides in London. Cara is joining the show to give us an update on what is going on with the dumpster fire that has become the royal family. Cara, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Cara, I want to start by asking for your reaction to Meghan and Harry. So the first part of their documentary dropped at 3 a.m., and the reviews I've been seeing are kind of mixed. Some people think that she's changing her story a lot. That'd be Meghan Markle. Other people are saying it was boring. It didn't give much. What do you think? Was there any bombshells in this part of the documentary?
So it's interesting because we were promised the kind of bombshell explosive documentary. But we just didn't get it. I guess they must be running out of things to say because we didn't really learn anything new. I mean, there was one point where they said that they met on Instagram, which is new because in 2017, Harry told the BBC that they met on a blind date. So that seems to be the only thing that we've kind of learned that's new information, but I don't think it helps them at all because it just kind of shows that their story changes from time to time.
And there were a few shots that were taken by Harry at King Charles. He did have a comment about, you know, you want to avoid the mistakes your parents make when you're raising children. And another swipe about suggesting that married royal men marry someone who fits the mold instead of choosing love. It seems like Harry has a real arrogance about him right now, and the way he's treating his family, it's got to be, I think it's just starting to rub people the wrong way in the United States, but I have to imagine this doesn't play well in Wales.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because there's been a massive shift, and what I've noticed is even the kind of staunchest Sussex fans are now being totally exhausted by the pay, because nobody can respect, like, taking flights for no reason. I mean, this is a very coordinated attack. When you release the trailer of a documentary about kind of taking aim at the royal family 2 days into Kate and William's trip to Boston, which is the first trip to the first royal trip to Boston since the 1970s. I mean, it was meant to be a special day, and it was totally overshadowed by the dropping of this documentary. And then the second leg of the documentary comes out on December the 15th, which will actually be the day that Catherine, the Princess of Wales, does her Christmas Carol concert, which she spends a lot of time on. She spends the whole year kind of setting it all up, and it's really, really special to her. So the second part of the documentary is going to overshadow her thing as well.
Yeah, and you know, I said the same thing, Cara, when they released that trailer, and it seemed very coincidental, the timing, and I said they're almost like professional thunder stealers. And a big problem people have with them is that they kind of preach this whole idea that they just want privacy, and they just want, you know, to be together, and they don't want the spotlight. And there was a lot of, you know, stock footage used in the documentary of paparazzi, and of course they're, you know, alluding to Diana and what she went through with the paparazzi. But then at the same time, they're welcoming these cameras into their homes. They're filming themselves, giving these teary-eyed testimonials. They're releasing photos that are never before seen. They're putting up clips of their children. It doesn't seem like they're that concerned with their privacy.
Well, I think it says everything you need to know when you look at the documentary and you realize that filming for this started before they even stepped down as royals. This was totally premeditated. It was totally planned. I wouldn't be surprised if it was planned way before January 2020 when they announced that they were stepping down. And it seems that for a couple that just want privacy, they've really gone out of their way to tell everybody this story. But I don't know if they're running out of things to say. I mean, we'll have to see in the second half of the documentary, but I haven't learned anything new, really, in the first half. So we'll have to see. But, yeah, and then Harry's book comes in January, so it just seems to be one thing after another. There's rumours that they're going on a talk show next week. So, yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you. For two people that claim that they want privacy, it seems that they're not really going through with that.
Yeah, and you know what you just said, which is, you know, it's funny because it's funny how you have people in your life who are interested in these topics and some people aren't. And someone I always end up talking to about the royals is my dad. And he always has pretty good insight on it. And he said to me yesterday, there's only so many times you can tell the same story and people will be interested. And like you just pointed out, they've done the Oprah interview. Now Harry's got more than one book in the works. He's got this documentary. They've got the podcast. People are, it's the exact right word, Kara. People are exhausted. They don't really want to hear it anymore. And another part of this that I would love to get your take on is, in the beginning, to kind of set the dramatic scene, they made a point of saying that they reached out to the royal family and that no one got back to them for comment. And now we're finding out that that might not actually be true.
Oh, yeah, that's very interesting. So, yeah, at the beginning, they claimed that members of the royal family declined to comment on the content within this series. But what we've heard in London so far already from royal officials that have insisted that they were never asked to comment at all. They were never given a preview. And as the Queen would say, recollections may vary. What Harry and Meghan claim is their truth sometimes isn't the truth. So, I mean, it's not very surprising that that's another thing that can be proven wrong.
I'm speaking with Kara Kennedy from The Spectator World. And there's one more part of this I want to get your take on, because I saw it today on Twitter. A friend of mine, David Marcus, put up this tweet where he said, you know, that this actually might be a good thing for the royal family, having Harry and Meghan, like you said, exhausting the public with all of these stories and almost, whether they mean to or not, becoming villains. And I think sometimes the best revenge is living well and you know, keeping things to yourself. And the more I see of Harry and Meghan, and then you juxtapose it with William and Kate, and I don't love everything William and Kate do. I think the Earth Shot thing here, yeah, some of it makes me roll my eyes. But it's hard not to look at them and admire how humble they are in a lot of ways and how much they're not kind of seeking out this attention, if that makes sense. So do you think there's any of that as far as approval or admiration for the royal family could be improving because of all these stunts by Meghan and Harry?
No, I think you're right, 100%. And what we saw in the British papers last week was that William's plans aren't going to be to fight back, aren't going to be to kind of brief the press against the Sussexes. What William's plan is to do is to kind of plod along and just get on with it and ignore them. And that is, it's very in line with what the Queen would do. It's very in line with like the classic royal way. And I think that is the best way, because right now, everybody, like I've mentioned a few times, everybody's exhausted by Meghan and Harry, and they've been proven to not just exaggerate the truth or be slightly hyperbolic in their claims. They've been proven time and time again to be actually telling lies. So, I think William and Catherine have displayed such kind of grace in the way that they've dealt with it. And I think, yeah, the best thing to do now will just be put your head down and carry on.
Yeah, and it's class, too. You see a lot of class with them. And I think that what you just said about ignoring it, there's nothing that drives people crazier than ignoring them when they want a reaction, when they want to be able to play the victim. If you just ignore it and keep living your life, I mean, it's going to drive them crazy. And eventually, like we said, this road's going to end too. There's only so many times you can sell the same story, but Kate and William will always be royal. That's never going to change for them. So it'll be interesting to watch this play out over the next couple of years. Kara Kennedy, thank you so much for joining us. And please tell people where they can find you online and on social media, and also where they can read your most recent piece about the empty eco-activism of dress renting.
Yeah, that was very interesting. Because as you just mentioned, you kind of roll your eyes sometimes at William and Catherine's endeavours. And that was what inspired the piece. It's like, you're a princess, you live in a castle, just buy the dress. You don't have to rent it for anybody else, you know?
Yeah, no, I do. Kara, tell people where they can find you.
So my Instagram, my Twitter handle is Kara Alice Kennedy. It's Kara with a K, A-L-Y-S, and then Kennedy. And I am a staff writer for The Spectator World.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kara. We really appreciate it. We'll definitely have you on again soon and keep up the good work. You know, as we're talking about some of this hot gossip, I'm going to come back to the States here for a second and give you guys a little bit more gossip. I don't know if people saw this. I didn't see it until today, but I guess Keith Olbermann, okay? I'm trying to follow this jerk. This is like water cooler conversation, okay? I'm going to talk to you like I'm with some of my girlfriends having a cocktail, okay? We're going to explain what's going down. Keith Olbermann.
Excuse me, I have to go stare at a wall blankly. I'll be right back.
Sir, as producer, you have to deal with this. Keith Olbermann, he used to be on some sort of cable network, I think MSNBC or
MSNBC,
something.
MSNBC, yeah.
Now I think he does his own thing. He's an independent contractor. I don't even know that. I really haven't listened to anything he's put out there. Sometimes he'll put out these weird videos where he's like foaming at the mouth. They happen to come across my desk. But he used to date Katie Turr back in the day. I think it was like 2006-ish. For a few years. And so I don't know why this drove him nuts, but Katie Turr, since then, she's married to a CBS anchor, Tony Dokapil. I don't know if I'm supposed to know him either. I've never heard of him before.
We've played him on the show a little bit.
Okay, well, he got a vasectomy. And
Did not see this turn coming. Okay.
Yeah, they made it public. They talked about it. I don't know why. I don't know what the context of the story was, but they made it public. For some reason, this drove Keith Olbermann, Katie Turr's ex, crazy. And he ends up doing this segment that he called, like, oh, secrets about Katie Turr, or secrets I would never tell, or something like that. And he said, so all of this time, I have remained, ooh, I'm putting on my Keith Olbermann voice. So all of this time, I have remained silent about the nearly 3 years she and I lived together, and the 8 years after that I remained her good and loyal friend. He then goes on to say that she had emergency surgery in 2007 and then 6 days later started punching and slapping him because the living room wasn't clean enough. How exactly do you even try to defend yourself against a woman who's 125 pounds lighter and a foot shorter than you? And he goes on to kind of air out all of this dirty laundry. And, you know, we were just talking about the best revenge is living well. They haven't dated, I don't think, since 2009. And Keith Olbermann's going on these rants about a woman who's married and has two children who has clearly moved on with her life. And he's sitting there going down a laundry list of reasons why he doesn't like Katie Turr. And another interesting part is he said that Katie Turr asked him to write her book. So she has this book out. And can you guess who it's about? Donald J. Trump, of course. That's how all these people made their bones. Unbelievable. My front row seat to the craziest campaign in American history. And that came out in 2017. Now, this is what Olbermann said. On January 22nd, 2017, Katie Turr of MSNBC asked me to write her Trump book for her. She was serious, and there are receipts. So all of this time, I have remained silent about the nearly 3 years she and I lived together, and the 8 years after that, I remained her good and loyal friend. So that's part of it, too, is that he feels like she asked him to write this book. I don't know if she was asking him to be a ghostwriter. I don't know. But talk about a bitter, twisted ex-boyfriend. Isn't this kind of nutty?
Yeah. What? So he found out that her husband got a vasectomy.
Yes.
And so therefore, he decided to basically pull a character assassination on her.
Yes, and air their dirty laundry.
Completely unrelated to anything having to do with him.
Air their dirty laundry from 2006. That's a long time ago, Jared. Sometimes we get into the mindset of like it's still 2012. You know, when you think the date is like 10 years before. 2006 was a long time ago to be ranting and raving on a podcast about a woman who's married with two children. That's Keith Olbermann. And Megyn Kelly was talking about
this
song.
Tracks.
Yeah, it does. It's very on brand for Keith. But Megyn Kelly was talking about this and she said, he just seems like the meanest person. Like every time something comes across our desk, whether it's a tweet or a video, he's so caustic. He's always screaming and he's always tearing people down. And he's always assassinating people's character. That is his brand. So I just wanted to let people know that that's what's going on. That's your Keith Olbermann check-in for the week, for the month, and honestly, probably for the year. So I hope you enjoyed it. When we come back, we're going to talk about the New York Times employees going on a 24-hour strike and Howie Carr has actually been a supporter of these employees in a way that they don't even know. And he's been supporting them for decades. We'll talk about that with Howie when we come back. This is the Grace Curley Show. But before we go, I want to let you know, the economy's unpredictable. We all feel it. Times are crazy. I understand that. Everybody's got a lot going on. But it's not the time to forget our fallen heroes. Despite what's happening around you, we have our military and our veterans to thank for our liberties and our freedoms and the reason why we are such a grateful nation. Now, National Race Across America Day is Saturday, December 17th. That's next Saturday. It's going to be here before you know it. And you can join in the mission to remember our fallen heroes, honor those who currently serve and their families, and then you have the opportunity to teach younger generations the value of their freedoms. It's not hard to get involved in this. The website is super easy to use. You're going to see these ceremonies taking place. They usually get a lot of airtime on Fox, on other channels. And it's really special if, when you see the ceremonies and you're so moved by them, if you know you're a part of it, if you know that you gave and you donated a wreath or two or three, and it's going to move you even more. And it's a way for you to really feel proud of your country and proud of yourself for participating. So the circular wreath made with 10 balsam bouquets is a catalyst for unity, healing, and an expression of gratitude. What started with America's most hallowed ground at Arlington National Cemetery has grown to ceremonies at over 3,500 participating locations across the country and overseas. Like I said, it's not super expensive. It's a $15 donation to Wreaths Across America that sponsors one of these wreaths, and it makes such a huge difference. So go to wreathsacrossamerica.org. If you've been hearing me talk about this for the last few weeks, it's coming up really soon. So I would definitely do this sooner rather than later. That's wreathsacrossamerica.org, wreathsacrossamerica.org. Please donate now. We'll be right back.
Grace Curley. She's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler and for the boys. Gotta keep the troops entertained.
No one knows Fisher Plows like Tux Trucks GMC in Hudson, Mass., your Fisher Plow distributor. They've stocked up heavy for the upcoming season. Fisher Plows, spreaders, accessories, and parts. So visit TuxTrucksGMC.com. Or call 1-800-MY-TRUCK. AOC is facing a House ethics investigation after her Tax the Rich Met Gala freebie. Remember, she wore that dress that said Tax the Rich in red on the back. And people were wondering, you know, how do you get into this event? Because you got to be pretty rich to go to the Met Gala. The tickets are pretty damn expensive. So a lot of people think that that's what this committee could be investigating. It's not confirmed yet. But what is confirmed is they're investigating something. 844-500-4242. And lastly, just a quick story here. The New York Times, we talked about how employees are about to go on a 24-hour strike. And Representative Jamal Bowman from New York is encouraging people not to cross the digital picket line. And do not consume their news from the New York Times tomorrow. We have to stand strong. Do not engage with any of the New York Times platforms. Do not cross the digital picket line. Just reading a couple of things there and kind of paraphrasing it. I want to say something. I have been supporting this walkout for the last 30 years, and I didn't even realize it. I have not been crossing the New York Times digital picket line for years. And Howie hasn't either, which is pretty amazing. 844-500-4242. It's been such a fun show. I thank you all for tuning in. Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a ton planned for you, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back tomorrow with our Friday extravaganza show. And I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. That's it for me. I'll catch you guys tomorrow. This is the Grace Curley Show.